Welcome to the Life Self-Mastery Podcast, where we bring in entrepreneurs who have created online businesses and improved their lifestyles. Here's your host, Rohit Malhotra.
Hi everyone, I'm Rohit from LifeSelfMastery.com, and today I'm excited to have Avlesh Singh, who's the founder of WebEngage, which is the marketing cloud for consumer businesses. Some of the companies who use their product include Flipkart, eBay, GoIBibo, Myntra, Taj Hotels, Souq, etc. Avlesh is the alumni of IIT Dhanbad. Welcome to the show, Avlesh.
Thanks, Rohit. Thanks for having me. Pleasure talking to you.
So Avlesh, how did you get your start in startups? And what got you really interested in entrepreneurship?
I know people have all sort of stories to tell, connecting dots in hindsight, and something or the other pans out. In my case, I think it was the case of nobody hiring me, kind of. And when you become unemployable of sorts, that you're only left with the choice of doing something on your own. That's the simplest form of the story. To elaborate it further, I used to work for this startup based out of Mumbai called burp.com, B-U-R-R-P.
Yeah.
Those who are aware of Zomato today, back in the day in 2006, 7, 8 era, there was only one product called Burp, which used to do restaurant reviews and recommendations. Was the first product in the space. We pretty much built the category. I was the founding engineer there, the very first guy in the engineering team, and built, led until the very exit of the company. It got acquired by Network 18, company called Infomedia, which was a very large Yellow Pages company back then. That journey was close to four and a half years. And after that journey, it did seem like that, working in a very typical setup would not come easy to me. And one thing led to another. I had a very small idea. I wanted to do something, build something, you know how typically engineers are. So it started with that. I said, okay, let's give it a shot. There's nothing to lose. That's how it started. And then one thing led to another. I my co-founder, his name is Ankit. He was also with me at Burp. So once I moved on after the exit, we sat together, we discussed a bunch of things, and, he decided to come with me, and, we took the plunge, and it's been 8 years now, close to 7 to 8 years now doing this. So unemployability from anybody else was probably the key reason why I started out.
Interesting, because you're a couple of guys, Deep, who be initial from Crowdfire, who went on to build other businesses. So does it really help to work in a startup or in a corporate job before you took a plunge into entrepreneurship, or does some sort of experience matter?
No, it surely does. I think working in a startup, a very fast-paced environment, I think what matters a lot is the kind of people that startup is able to attract. Early on in any business, including startups, the success or the failure of the business completely depends on the kind of people, behind the scenes. And Burp, we just got plain lucky. There were a bunch of these very smart folks across the board, across product, engineering, design, even sales going forward when we started doing a little bit of sales. We had very, very smart folks across the board. And that probably made Burp what it became, in a sort of short span of time. Another thing that Zomato ate away our lunch as soon as, they saw the whole mobile revolution coming in, and we kind of lost track of that. But that said, as you rightly pointed out, all these guys from that Burp pedigree back in the day who used to build Burp are now, pretty much doing their own set of things now. That's basically the DNA of what the team was. So, I would directly attribute the ability for me to even articulate or think of doing something on my own to my experiences at Burp. And having worked with and spoken to all these people, I'm truly privileged that I had the chance to actually work with them. And if not for it, I probably would have, not started up on my own.
Yeah. Got it. So you started with Web Clipper. So, how did that pivot happen in Web Engage?
And that's a story. Will be too long for the podcast, but I'll give you a gist. So the company is even today called Web Clipper, by the way. Okay. We have all sort of funny jokes inside the company around that. But it started with us thinking. So me and Ankit, we had this idea around building a better Evernote. The classic note-taking app, right. Don't care about it anymore. But back in the day, it used to be a big thing. And we thought that, we would build a better Evernote and with some special capability. And the name, for whatever reason, we chose Web Clipper. So we built for, I think, good 6 months. And both of us, a couple of other interns. And there came in a point wherein, we were starting to run out of whatever money we had. And we had to figure out a way to either raise capital or start monetizing. Raising capital was very difficult. While everybody gave us a very good sort of listening. They would hear us. They would, they would meet us. They would like us also in many cases. But nobody was willing to take the plunge and they wouldn't say it, but basically nobody wanted to believe in the idea. And it was very difficult to raise after, we tried a lot. This is 2011, 2010 and 11 era. So there was not as much activity as you see now, in the early stage funding space. So there were only as many people you could have gone to. and we kind of exhausted all those options. So then we decided, this doesn't seem to be the case. So we need to figure out how we want to go back and make money from our customers. If I remember correctly, we had close to 30,000 active users back then. And decent usage, very kind of very selective users as such, right? Lawyers and doctors and people in the academia. We had those kind of users. And we dropped them an email one morning saying that, we are converting this free tool. It was a free tool back then. So we said, we are converting this into a freemium tool. The free thing will be stripped down to some very, very basic features. And everything else, all the fancy stuff that people were using for free goes into paid tiers. And for prices starting, I think, as low as $9, $10 a month, we thought that was sort of an apt pricing per user. And we shot this email. And then, as a founder, that was probably like one of the first most... first biggest rejections that we had to face and enlightened us also. So most customers, of course, didn't respond. They didn't care to respond. Some did. And those who did, they had all sort of bad things to talk about us in terms of how dare we could even think of putting a price tag on a tool like that because there were 10 other free tools that they could use. And that's how we discovered that there were actually like other 15 to 20 names that we were not even aware of.
Oh, okay.
Some we knew of already, but a lot of discovery happened. And we have a large part of this customer base, by the way, that I'm talking about was US and UK. So we had no firsthand exposure per se. And we started discovering a bunch of these tools, better than us, more evolved, and of course free. So that was very difficult because barely, other than a few people, nobody was willing to commit to sort of a paid plan. Not good enough for us to say, this seems like worth doing it. So that was, I think, the turning point. We mulled over it. I think we spent another 2 months or so after that event trying to figure out what else we can do. Maybe there is more value we can build versus, the thought process saying, one life, one golden chance, one opportunity, might as well go after something big. And, we chose to do the latter. We said, no, this doesn't seem to be very big unless we raise VC money. And that was not in, near sight. That wasn't, seemingly not happening. So we said, let's close this chapter. Let's move on to the next thing. And that led to the birth of Web Engage. Happy to talk about it if you want me to. But after we did that, took us 2 months of that time to, you know, shift from this idea to that one. But thankfully, we haven't looked back since then.
So, you know, that's my next question. What is Web Engage all about, and how can companies use your product?
Right. So today, Web Engage has gone through a pivot. Let me talk about what it does today. The fancy jargon is that we are a marketing automation cloud focused on consumer businesses. That essentially means that if you're a consumer company, consumer tech company, right, you're anything which is a retail, e-commerce, travel, hospitality, education tech, fintech. If you're any of these businesses, you need to devise ways to engage your existing users. Keep your retention numbers in check, in fact, improve them, and basically, you know, drive your customers towards advocacy. And to be able to do that, you need a very cohesive thought process. You need a plethora of tools to make it happen. And a large part of this problem statement revolves around being able to, you know, collate data from multiple sources so that you have a view of your customer, right? In the conventional CRM way, wherein you can see your customer as one across all touch points, across your website, across your mobile apps, across your POS stores, across your CRM, across your call centers, right? All possible touch points. You get to see your customer's profile, quote unquote, as one. And once you've done that, then the piece around retention revolves largely around being able to engage, which is by virtue of being able to send out very relevant, triggered, and timely and personalized communication, right? This could, if you're a mobile heavy business, it is largely about communicating on inside your mobile app, communicating outside of it through push notifications. If you're largely a web app, then it's through browser push and on-site messaging. If it is a more traditional business, then through email, SMS, you know, a bunch of these, we call them as channels of engagement. But essentially, to put it all together, as a marketer, if you are a consumer business, you need something to basically see a holistic profile of your customer and then run these automated engagements to drive them towards, you know, reorders, repurchases, and then finally towards advocacy. That is the problem we are solving at Web Engage. And we use this the whole stack is essentially in the category of being called a marketing automation cloud, which offers customer analytics, which offers ability to segment, which offers you ability to engage across any channels of these communication. And more importantly, there's a very cool thing that we do, which is very unique to us. We let you build what we call as journeys, wherein instead of, you shooting out campaigns or messages to users, and as bulk messages, right? We all hate that bulk message that we keep getting on our phones every day. We've moved our customers towards a more life cycle based messaging. So for example, if you've installed my app, my first journey for you as a customer is about taking you from installation to first transaction if I were an e-commerce business.
Right.
And that we call as a journey, right? Because in between that journey, a user will do multiple deviations from an ideal workflow that you have in mind, right? The most ideal thing is that the guy downloads the app, browses for a product, goes ahead and makes a transaction. But that's not how typically it works. So the users will keep going away, keep coming back. They'll have multiple digressions, right? So what journeys basically does is it tries to let you envisage these sort of diversions and digressions within a typical user lifecycle as one workflow. If the user does this and doesn't do this within certain time span, then maybe do this, you know, or that side of a workflow. We call this the journey designer. It's a visual workflow builder. Very, very cool. One of the strongest selling points of Web Engage. And we do a pretty amazing job with that as a product. And that's essentially where, you know, we are basically driving marketers and product managers towards in helping them move away from mass mailing, mass messaging sort of marketing to more triggered and very hyper-personalized. in-context messaging. That's what we do. That's what WebEngage is all about. This is, however, what we do now. When we pivoted, right, 7 years ago from WebClipper to WebEngage, the product used to be just one single channel of all the channels that we offer today, and that channel is on-site messaging. That's where the name also comes from, which is basically once a user lands on your site, how do you basically get the guy towards the conversion funnel, right? So if somebody's on your site and, you know, does not browses for a product but does not finish a transaction in, let's say, 10 minutes, you basically throw an on-site pop-up saying that if you're still interested in this, here is a discount, go ahead and, you know, complete the transaction. And many more variants like that. So we pivoted from WebClipper to WebEngage, where WebEngage was this piece around on-site engagement. Today, we have evolved into multiple channels of engagement. There's a lot of data analytics that's come in. So we are more holistic now, but this remains a channel of engagement inside the product suite even today.
Correct. And you know, how many customers do you have on WebEngage, and, you know, how many of them are US-based customers?
Right. We have over 1,000 customers across the globe. And we are largely focused on India, Southeast Asia, and, you know, the emerging markets. And a large chunk of our customer base is in these markets. US is fairly small. We have, I think, close to 20% of our customer base is US. Okay. And most of our sales and marketing engine, it runs on an inbound model. Which is basically we do a lot of content. We try and do a lot of education through multiple sources, and we get people to come to us. So in that sense, US still has not been the primary focus till date. We have been focused more around India and, you know, India and the subcontinent and other emerging markets, which is where we see our traction coming from. US is still, I think, a year down the line. But today, we do 20% of our business from the US.
Yeah. Interesting. So you know, how did you get your first 100 customers for a SaaS product like yours? Is it more word of mouth or some growth hacking techniques that you've used? How did you get your first 100 customers or first 10 or, you know, first 50 customers?
Bunch of things we did, but I think one thing that stood out, and I don't know if you want to label this as a growth hack, but my co-founder figured that, so we used to do this on-site engagement, right, earlier, and a lot of people on Quora as a platform were asking questions which basically revolved around finding a solution that we were building, right? So how do you do this on your website? How do you kind of, at runtime, when somebody is about to leave a website, how do you basically get the guy to not bounce and stay back? Right. So people were actually looking for tools to help them solve that problem. They may not be articulating it in the same manner as the problem statement that we had at WebEngage and the solution we had, but they were facing similar problems and they're looking for solution. And I wasn't on Quora then. So my co-founder figured that, this seems like a place where we should be replying because there are a bunch of people looking for a solution. And, you know, each question being asked, there are 3-4 followers. So there are, like, you know, potentially hundreds of people who are actually looking for something like this. So why not directly go ahead and tell them, come and try, because you have a product which solves this problem. That's how it started. And, as strange as it may sound, it actually worked. So our first set of 100 customers, I don't know what chunk I would attribute, but a large chunk of that 100 came from Quora threads. They discovered us online, they found us online through those answers, signed up for a free trial. We had a good product, so our conversion rates are fairly good. I think one of the biggest growth hacks would have been probably Quora. And the usual, word of mouth, it followed subsequently. But there was a lot of push on, all the social channels trying to tell the world that, you know, hey, there is something, why don't you take a look? Why don't you give this a try? It solves this one basic core need. And, I think we had a lot of conviction on the idea in terms of the need gap being there, because we were trying to do something similar while we were at work to facilitate for our marketing. right. So from a product validation standpoint, I think we had a pretty legit use case. In fact, the idea originated because we wanted to build something like this at work. The use case was real. The need was real. So the thesis was that, you know, every online company has to go through this, and every online marketing manager will find it difficult. So let's build something for that. And the thesis played out, thankfully.
Got it. And you know, what is the pricing model of your product, and what is your take on freemium model? When people get used to freemium or free product, do they go into the next funnel? And you know, what has been your strategy to convert more of these free users into paid users?
Right. No, that's a very touchy topic. because you'll hear a lot of opinions around this, and from some very informed people, some very experienced people. I think, you know, there's no one answer to this in my experience, and we have been on both sides. We have done freemium, we have done gated. There's no free in WebEngage now, let alone freemium. Now, you know, I think it's a function of, one, the category you are in, and two, the ticket size of the product. Right. So my belief is that if you're anything which is $5,000 to $6,000 worth of ACVs, right, freemium is a very good way to build traction. It's a very sweet price point to convert a guy from free into a paid tier. Right. Okay. But if you look at WebEngage today, our ACVs are around $30,000 to $35,000.
Okay.
Now converting a free guy from there to a $30,000 to $35,000 product is very tough. I mean, it just doesn't work. You know, for a guy who is on free, the guy is on free for a reason, because the guy cannot afford to pay. And converting that to a $30,000 sort of a deal is very, very difficult. It's almost an impossible task. Premium clearly is not a model if you are going after the mid-market guys, or if you're going after the large enterprise segment. To me, freemium is not a model in that case. In case of a long tail product, where ACVs are fairly small, 3,000 to 6,000 sort of ACVs, freemium is the way to go. So that's how I look at it. In the latter segment of, like, you know, mid-market as well as enterprise, people have dabbled with multiple things. You know, some are completely gated. You can't even take a look at the product unless you've spoken with the sales guy. Right. Some say, you know, you get a free trial. So sign up, and then, you know, there is a 2-week, 4-week sort of a free trial. And then you start billing. I think it's largely a call that products need to take depending on where their markets are. What does the onboarding cycle look like? Is it simple? Is it complicated? Does it take time? Does it need a lot of integrations? A lot of those answers will lead to the, you know, to sort of you deciding between whether you want to do a free trial, you just want to keep it gated, not open at all. But as I said, you know, I strongly believe that if you're mid market and above, you want to go more up market. To me, freemium is not a strategy.
Got it. And you know, you're based out of India. How do you sell a product to an audience who's not based out of India, or they're in US? So does your sales team make multiple visits to these countries and engage with them, or do you do all your selling online?
Sure. It's a completely inbound approach that we have, which is mostly about creating awareness online and getting people to come and talk to us. People talk to us, come to us for either taking a demo, or they know that they want a product and they want to take, you know, they want to get a price, however that be. But a large part of what we do inside our demand generation is about creating more inbound leads for our sales team. The sales team is mostly an inside sales team, which basically is people get the lead, they follow it up. We do online demos. A lot of these guys, WebEx, all of that is what we do. And in India, we, wherever needed, the deal size demands, we also follow it up with face-to-face meetings. Outside of India, most of the times, it's always, the closures are always online. We very rarely go and meet a customer outside of India for a sales deal. And we have done it around events and trade shows. We do those and we try and give customers face time during those. But largely, as far as a deal is concerned, the entire cycle is about generating the lead, getting it in the cycle, and closing it through online demos and online or phone calls.
Got it. And I want to talk about how big is your team, and if you're comfortable to talk about your revenue numbers or other metrics.
I can tell you the revenue numbers, but I'll have to kill you, which I don't want to. So I'll keep the revenue numbers intact. But the team is close to 80 members. We're mostly in Bombay. We have a small team in Bangalore now. And we're shortly going to set up a Dubai presence as well. Middle East is growing fairly, fairly quickly. So we're going to set up there soon as well. Customers, I think, as I said earlier, they fall into 5 to 6 big sort of buckets in terms of industries that we cater to. Most of, pretty much all of these guys are digital first consumer tech businesses. They're either an e-commerce business or a travel business or a hospitality business, or they fall into BFSI, EdTech, or, the usual consumer listings classified business. These are the 5, 6, 7 sort of categories that we primarily cater to. We have a little bit of FMCG, retail, all that on the side. But yeah, most of the focus is, and among these 5, 6 categories that I mentioned, almost 60% of the business is e-commerce and travel. That's the largest chunk. India is close to 40% of our business. The rest is kind of very evenly spread amongst 4-5 key markets. And average ticket size, I told you, it's roughly $20,000. That's, I think we're doing close to $31,000 by end of this quarter. That's the ACVs. Our customer acquisition costs is fairly low. We are hovering at around $700, $750 for almost 6 to 9 months now. That's where we have been. What else can I tell you? What else do you want to know?
So I think that's pretty helpful. I want to talk about how did you raise funding from Social Capital, and you went on to raise a CAS. Can you talk more about it? How did you get Social Capital on board?
Yeah, no, it was pretty interesting. The whole exercise of raising that chunk from Capital as a Service was fairly interesting because we never met anybody at Social Capital to raise that money. Okay. In fact, we only had one phone call towards the end of it just to figure out some of the legal terms. And, after they decided to invest, until the time that they decided to invest, we actually never spoke to anybody. And it actually was one a very different experience personally for me. So those who don't know, Capital as a Service is a separate sort of vehicle run by Social Capital, wherein they invest based on analysis of your data, data that you provide privately to them in the formats that they ask for, and whatever public domain data that they can glean on you. They take decisions based on analyzing your performance data, performance metrics, putting it in comparison with other players, your competitors in the space. And, if everything looks nice and good, they basically just like that. So it's that's the investment thesis. And, it was very fascinating to actually go through that cycle and having raised money from CAS. It's a very good sort of experience, one. And two, Social Capital, by virtue of, they are very B2B focused in their approach, very enterprise focused in their approach. So that whole pedigree of companies, that they have funded, the portfolio, becomes sort of a very good resource to tap into, from multiple perspectives, including knowledge, wisdom, market access, and general founder fraternity, right? It's always good to learn from people who have been in the grind for a very long time and have won some of these key markets. So for me, that's almost invaluable. And that's been the best part of being able to raise from them.
Got it. And did somebody from Social Capital join your board, or is it very,
No, they don't have a board seat, but they're an observer.
Okay, got it. And so let's quickly do the top three. What's your favorite business book?
What's my favorite business book? I don't read too many. Generally not into reading, but I do read a few. If you talk about business books specifically, I've read a few and I found The hard thing about hard things, very, very fascinating. In fact, we ended up gifting that copy to everybody in the office and force everybody to read it also. But personally, it's one of my favorites.
Got it. And if you could go back in time when you started WebEngage, what is the one thing you would have focused on?
If I had to change?
Yeah, I mean, what if you want to go back, would you do something differently, or would you just keep it the same?
No, there are a bunch of learnings, you know, that I have had in this journey, and if I had to start all over again, there are certain things that I really know, you should do in the right manner. I think one of the things, if you had to just ask me to pick one, I think as founders, as first-time founders, right? The essence of time, there is a very, you have to be a very different kind of founder to value time differently, right? And in this part of the world, it's very unfortunate that, time is not money for most people.
Right.
It's a cultural issue, right? So that's how you're brought up. And we have time in abundance. We don't value our own time. And, when you ask somebody, in fact, today we had a meeting, right? And this is again anecdotal, but just hear me out. So we had a meeting, and one of my team members from marketing, they wanted to start doing video testimonials from our customers. So far we don't do video testimonials. A lot of it is in the form of text, PDF, online blogs. We intend to now start doing videos. And, we were trying to figure out how to go about this, what to do. Amongst that, there was this question around what sort of budget do we keep aside for this? And, in that entire budgeting exercise, by the way, the cost that was included was only the money that was to be paid to the agency who was going to work on it.
Right.
Not the amount of time that my folks would be spending on it. They won't factor it in. In fact, when I asked for it, it wasn't even intuitive to them. So it's just a cultural issue. It's as founders, we suffer from that too. And more so as first time founders, the thing that it leads to is basically, it doesn't having that built in sort of sense of urgency. It always helps, right? I strongly think that we have wasted 2 years in the 7 year journey in just trying to figure things out because we had a lot of time to take decisions. If I had a sense of urgency built in, and I could basically impart that to my team, we could have saved at least 2 years in the journey to be where we are right now, or we would have been further ahead right by now. So it's that one thing that I would I would love to have changed in me as a founder, and then subsequently in my team, to always have that sense of urgency. It just helps.
Interesting. So, and what's your favorite online tool? For example, Gmail, Slack, Lead Pages.
Well, Gmail nobody lives without. So, I think Gmail. Gmail is Gmail. You're always there. Our company stack, it runs on the Google product suite as well. So, yeah, Gmail of course is there. It's almost like a 24/7 tool. Organization-wide, we use Slack. I find it very effective. I was initially very reluctant, but then everybody pulled me in, and I think it's become one of the key collaboration tools within the company. My personal favorites have always been Jira. We use the entire stack at WebEngage also, and we made sure that in our prior companies also we have always used it, not only for issue tracking, ticketing, but also Confluence and the whole stack that Jira has to offer. So we're pretty big on that product stack. As a software company, we tend to run on software across the board. I'm not the primary user for most of them. So my personal favorites revolve around the ones that I get to use. So Jira, Slack, and Gmail, I think, if I had to list the top 2-3.
Got it. What's the best way people can reach out to you?
I'm fairly social in that sense. I dump a lot of garbage on my Twitter stream. I think the easiest way to catch my attention is to be poking me on Twitter. I think I'd probably be the most responsive there. I respond to my emails, I think well in time as well. Those who are savvy enough to find what my email is, they'll find it. It's there. So, and once I have an email, I'll be responding.
Got it. Yeah. Vlesh, thanks a lot for coming on to the show. I'm sure, you know, listeners would have learned a lot. I really appreciate coming to the show.
Pleasure all mine. Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thanks for listening to the Life Self-Mastery podcast, where we teach you how to start and grow your online business. For more information, visit Rohit's blog at www.lifeselfmastery.com.